The Hero's Journey, a Mindful Accord podcast with your host, Rich Decker.
Hello, and thank you for taking some of your valuable time to listen to the show. My guest today is Rita Hudgens. Rita is a certified life and personal development coach with Transform University, her company. She specializes in helping entrepreneurs, achievers, and leaders make positive changes in their behavior. She coaches them to reach their full potential by developing a warrior's mindset. Rita will tell you that she is a warrior who was raised by warriors. When you hear her story, you will no doubt see that she is indeed a warrior. The valley in the abyss stage of Rita's hero's journey was quite deep. She was literally just a few breaths away from death, and that was just the beginning of her hardships. At the lowest point, Rita did something that most of us wouldn't be brave enough to do. She started her own company. This is the hero's journey of Rita Hudgens. Enjoy. Well, thank you, Rita. Thank you for joining us today on the Hero's Journey, a Mindful Accord podcast. I'm very excited for everyone to hear your story.
Oh, well, thank you, Rich. I'm very happy to be here.
Great. Well, let's start at the beginning of your journey. Tell us about your childhood. Where'd you grow up? And something I like to ask everyone that comes on the show, for better or worse, sometimes it's worse, what principles did your parents instill in you and what are you still carrying with you today?
Those are all great questions, Rich. Are you sure you're not a life coach? You're trying to take my job here?
Those are
great questions.
No.
It's a appropriate place to start always at the beginning. And I had an incredible childhood with my parents. My parents were both what I call warriors. My mom had to overcome extreme poverty. She was orphaned by the time she was 10 years old. Worked very, very hard. And my dad stormed the beaches of Normandy the day after D-Day. So just the things that both my parents overcame, what it instilled in me are two things that stand out. One is faith, and the other is a hard work ethic. They were both very blue collar. My dad worked for the utility company and my mom waitressed until she was 80 years old. So having just that strong work ethic has stayed with me through my life.
I wonder if our father's paths crossed. My dad was at Normandy as well.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you know when he landed?
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't, but who knows?
Yeah. Was he in the Army, Navy?
He was in the Army under Patton.
Yeah, my
General
dad
Patton.
Was too.
Oh, he was?
Yeah. See, small world.
Wow. So was it the 5th Army?
I don't know. I could look through his records. I don't know. My dad's no longer with
sure.
So to ask, but yeah.
They may have crossed paths.
Yeah. And just the things that they had to face. Even if you see movies like Saving Private Ryan, it doesn't depict what went on inside. And the stories that he told me, basically leading up to D-Day, there was, an array of boats. And one day one boat would go forward and then it would come back. Then the next day, the next one would go forward. Who was going to take the lead? Who were going to be the first to land? On D-Day, his was not one of the first ones to land. And so that story always sticks with me.
Right. Right. You know, my father was haunted by that till the day he died. Mm-hmm. He thought, he was a very staunch Catholic. Mm-hmm. So he thought he was going to hell for what he did. And it was interesting. So here's a story you don't hear about. I don't know what your father shared with you, but so my dad told me that he was a sergeant. And so they were on the front lines all the time in mm-hmm. under Patton's 5th mm-hmm. Army. So he would tell the guys in the front, said, listen, you have to stand your ground. If you get scared and retreat, we're all dead. We're all dead. Mm-hmm. So there were times when that would happen and he'd had to shoot his own men.
Mm. That's so tough.
That is so tough.
Did he get counseling?
That generation counseling wasn't really mm-hmm. something that men did.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's counseling was beer. A lot of beer.
You know, I was very fortunate. My dad was obviously, you cannot go through that and not be affected. And there were times when my dad, I don't want to say manifested, but where my dad became very fearful. And now I can look and see, you know, I'd go in the room and he was rocking. And so I guess you could call that a form of post-traumatic stress disorder. But for the most part, he was totally fine. Plus, he kept in contact with so many, probably 5 or 6 other men in his platoon. And so at Christmas, when I was a little girl, I would, you know, address the Christmas cards and help my dad. So I knew all their names. And after my dad passed, there was one still living that he became my best friend because he would tell, and he was so strong. And he would just tell me these stories. He would send me pictures. And so it was a way of staying connected. But that definitely was the greatest generation.
Yeah, it was interesting. My father's friend, Al, my mom and Al became friends after my dad died. But he suffered same thing. You know, he was 80 years old, still having nightmares. Mm. And he was in the Pacific, which was extremely brutal. I mean, they don't show that in the movies necessarily. Yeah. Maybe a few of them, but it was brutal there. Because Al would tell me, you know, when you're landing on an island, there's nowhere to put POWs. So they had to kill them. They shot them and killed them. So, I mean, it was horrible. It's horrible. Yeah. But anyway, let us move on back to Rita's story, which is, I guess that's part of your story, yes?
It is part of your story. It's actually part of everybody's story. Your audience who's listening, they all have an incredible story to tell.
Oh, I agree. That's why one reason why I started this show isn't just famous people or celebrities.
You mean everybody, I'm not famous or I'm not a celebrity? I'm just kidding. Okay.
All right. Well, let me rephrase that then.
No. Continue.
So I was kidding. Everybody,
that's my humor.
Yes. Everybody has a hero's journey. We just don't see it.
That's right.
You know,
that's
we have right. two lives. They have this life you live for, and then you're kind of like, oh, you know, this just isn't working.
Yeah.
And then you go through usually, unfortunately, suffering, and then you come out at the other side a different person.
Right.
So that's why that's the hero's journey story or myth is in every culture in human history. Every culture has a form of the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. Star Wars, everything, Harry Potter, all of it. But we resonate with that story because I think we all live it.
Right.
We just don't realize it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So when you were growing up, what did you foresee the future for Rita?
You know, that's a question that people have asked me. I had one answer. It's a little girl. I just want to help people. That was the only answer I had. I didn't want to be a nurse because I didn't want to like change bedpans or anything. Yeah. But I could not see myself, you know, in like a medical setting. But all I wanted to do was help people. When I was in high school, people would say, what are you going to major in college? I don't know. I just want to help people. All I ever really wanted to do was help people.
So what did you do initially?
Initially, when I was at ASU, after I graduated, I grew up right here in Phoenix and went to 12 years of St. Mary's School, grade school and high school.
Oh.
Then I went to 2 years at Phoenix College, and then I went on to ASU, and I did major in psychology.
Oh, you did?
I thought this is the route that I'd like to take.
Did you do anything with it?
Well, I'm doing it now.
Yeah,
I mean, I do have
but initially,
a background. No, I got married.
Oh.
And so I got married and that kind of changed the trajectory of my life. And but I'm doing things with it now.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. So you chose a path that, a stay-at-home mom is almost extinct.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to that, you homeschooled your kids. Why did you choose that?
I don't want to say that I've always been a bit of a rebel, but I've always looked at things differently. And there are two main reasons. Number one, I wanted to be able to give my children a classical education to where they would be grounded in Latin and Greek roots so that they would be able to think and not just be taught things or memorized things. And also, at the time, my family moved a lot. So it was the second reason was to keep the family together.
Oh, that's interesting. I never heard anyone say that. So how do you, when you're going to homeschool your children, how do you prepare yourself to become a teacher?
Well, back then, it was not as easy as it is now. You see, the homeschooling movement has just magnified. It's so encompassing now. And so many people, number one, are aware of it. Number two, are doing some form of it. And back then, people would ask me, is that legal? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this to your
children? Is it legal?
Yes. But you've got to understand, my oldest son, he's 34 years old. So I started doing this 30 years ago. So that's, how did I prepare? I studied. I'm a very high when I do my clients' assessments. One of them is a passions index, and it measures 7 motivators. And one of my top motivators is I'm highly theoretic, to where I'm a book nerd. I will study and I will learn things. And so I just taught myself everything before I taught the kids.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. So you did your own self-education mm-hmm. before you educated your children. Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of resistance did you experience doing that when it wasn't common?
There was quite a bit of resistance from family. You know, my parents came over. I remember them coming to the house and they said, we'll pay for private schooling. Oh. And, you know, you were looked at as if you were odd. And to me, I don't care. But my kids, probably, especially the two oldest, might have felt like they were labeled. They were, you know, the stereotypic homeschool nerds. So I think it affected them. But now as adults, they say they were glad for the experience and what they learned and who they are.
When you homeschool, how do you deal with the social side of it? How do you expose your kids to social interaction?
My kids are so, always have been very social, and they, you know, did sports. The boys did sports, and the girls did ballet and sports. And then there was always church activities. And we did have a tight-knit homeschool community that grew. Probably, let's see, I started homeschooling when my oldest was 4. Probably by the time he was 8, there was maybe 4 other families. And we were very, very close. And my children are still close with the kids that we co-opt with.
That's interesting. Well, let's move on then. So you have your family, you're starting your family, you're living your life. Mm-hmm. But you started having some health issues. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was going on with that? And what I'm curious about from where you're at now, after your journey, so to speak, how do you view those health issues?
Yeah, I had quite a bit of health issues. I almost died. I went into respiratory failure in 2001. So my lungs mm-hmm. were damaged from that. If I could tell your audience anything about their lives, about health, it's to really know your limitations, to take care of yourself, because I have always been an extremely strong person and driven. And I think I thought I could handle much more than what I could. So for me, it would be nothing to live on 3-4 hours of sleep and get up and then keep on going. And that's what eventually, I believe, wore me down, was just the constant going, the not sleeping, skipping meals. And it just set my body up for, you know, to get sick.
I'm glad you mentioned sleeping. They're doing studies now that it's so important to get a proper amount of sleep. Not only when we're sleeping, your body releases hormones that heal your body.
Exactly.
But there's these cells in our brain called microglia. Mm-hmm. And what they do is when we're sleeping, they clean up our brain.
Yeah.
So if you're not sleeping enough, mm-hmm. your body is not being healed and your brain isn't getting cleaned up.
No, they're like a dishwasher. And it goes in and it cleans all these things up. And that's one thing to this generation I cannot stress enough, because of technology. And kids are going to bed with their phones in their bedrooms or close to them. And what's happening is their sleep is getting interrupted. And we have higher levels of people with anxiety and sleep disorders because they're not getting the sleep. When I take my clients through what I call the warrior's journey, it's, okay, how much sleep are you getting? What's your nighttime routine? What's your morning routine? And one of the things is unplug an hour. Ideally, research shows 2 hours, but if I can get them to at least unplug an hour, like even the light from the computer signals the retina, it's daytime, stay awake. So there are, they're losing melatonin production by them not unplugging. So that's, sleep is huge. It's not, overrated.
Yeah, it's not negotiable, really.
No,
because
it's non-negotiable.
Your body doesn't reason, it just is. And if it's not being cared for, it will break down.
Yeah.
So you attribute your health issues then to just your constantly being on the go?
I think so. As I look back, the times when I was just exhausted, but I kept on thinking that I could go. And that's one thing I would tell your audience is just because you can doesn't mean you should. And just, you have to be able to know when to let go of certain things and take care of yourself.
So how many years were you dealing with health issues?
Well, they've come on and off according to stress levels and activities and having children. I have 4 children. And homeschooling the kids and moving and having a family business. There were just a lot of factors. And so then something would happen, like I got valley fever. That was the initial. That was the initial. And then when you get worn down, all these other little demons inside your body kind of rise. So I got Epstein-Barr. I developed Lyme disease. So I have all of these things that my body, it was probably down somewhere, but once your immune system gets weakened, then they come up. And I'm a really energetic, vibrant person, so it took a lot for those things to come up.
Valley fever, Lyme disease, Epstein-Barr,
Microplasma pneumonia.
Holy cow.
Name a few.
So how do you, obviously you got medical treatment, but what do you think helped you heal the most?
I always look at things through the lens of faith. And I do this with my clients too. Whenever I look for roots, I look for patterns. And I say, anytime you're faced with a challenge, you have to look at 3 avenues. You look what's going on spiritually, what's going on emotionally, and what's going on physically. So the easiest thing that I could handle was the physical. And I just kept on searching naturopathic doctors and going for treatments. I still go periodically for treatments to keep everything at bay. So I have just high vitamin C, IVs, echinacea, glutathione, ozone, all of these to help keep my body in a state of, maximum performance. And then I look at spiritually, where am I spiritually? Where am I emotionally? What's taxing me emotionally? And the greatest thing about learning, being certified as a life coach, is I learned how to handle all of these things. I learned how to stop responding to an environment, how our emotions can be our best friends or they can be our worst enemy. So just tackling those 3 areas.
I've always been curious about how thoughts influence our health.
Oh, they do. They're connected. You have to look at the body from a holistic view, and you can't compartmentalize something. If something is happening out here, you have to look at the whole picture because it's all connected.
Right. Well, let's get on to from my perspective, the major event in your life that was kind of the beginning of the crossing from the known to the unknown. Not only were your health issues, but then you were married for about 30 years?
31.
31 years. Yes. And then your marriage ended.
It did.
And can you explain that situation? I know you faced a great many dragons and obstacles. Mm-hmm. What happened?
Well, the toughest part for me was my values were family. And my values still are family. My values are love and loyalty and commitment and faithfulness. And so all of those things came to, I'm going to get a divorce, but this is who I am. It wasn't, these were the past 31 years of my life, but it was also, these are all the things that I believe in. So when you're challenged with your world coming apart and your life now, it seems, appears like it's not going to be congruent with your values. Me personally, I just experienced a tremendous amount of guilt and shame having to face people who, you know, I had to tell, no one knew. And so facing friends and facing family, for me, that was very, very difficult. And at the time, I took a lot of the blame myself. I still take blame for things. That's my first default. A side note, my son's puppy, she's not a puppy, she was like 10 years old, but his dog, we had to put her down last week. And I took her into the vet, and the vet said, she's in kidney failure. My first default is, what did I do wrong? And so, but then I said, okay, there was nothing I could have done. You know, she, you know, had her checkups. This just happened and we didn't have any indication. But put that in the context of, you know, investing in 31 years in a family, a relationship, it's now dissolving. My big thing is, what did I do wrong? What could I have done? And so it was just, for me, I had to get past that part to be able to experience healing.
What were you facing with the divorce?
Just the guilt and the shame, just the emotions, the being drained, the feeling like a failure.
Now, was it, do you think that stemmed from the, I know some people seem like they have this, you know, the Cleaver family, but in reality, things are not so Cleaverish.
No, our family was Cleaver.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
So was it kind of, you're going to lose that it's, or what?
I think it was just loss, you know,
just loss. After 31 years.
Yeah, it's loss and the loss of a dream. That's the biggest thing, I think, is all of us have dreams. So what happens when you experience a loss of a dream and then you're taking the blame for it?
Now, you've been a stay-at-home mom, homeschooling kids. Now, do you still have two younger kids when this happened?
Well, yes, you're right. Good memory. Yeah, two were still at home. Two were out of the house and two are at home.
So you had to find employment. Is this when you started Transform University?
First, what I did was, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with my life? Because I had been, you know, a stay-at-home mom prior to that in college. I had waited on tables. I don't think they call them waitresses anymore, but that's what I was.
Right.
And so it's like, do I go back to that? What do I do? And my youngest daughter then was done with high school. So then I had my youngest son, Rock. But after the divorce, Rock and I moved in with my mom. And then she started showing signs of dementia. So I was faced with how in the world am I going to do all this? Rock decided to go to high school. I was taking care of my mom and getting certified. The first thing I did was I got certified as a Pilates instructor. I thought, this is the route that I'm going to go. I'll be a health instructor. And it was great. And now I can teach my own Pilates class, but I wanted more. I wanted so much more. And so I looked into life coaching and that's where I started. I have 7 certifications in life coaching and I just, you know, go back to that child. I just wanted to help people.
Well, most people in your situation would go to, say, a normal job instead of starting their own business.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty, I'm not a normal person.
Apparently not. I mean, that most people would be terrified of doing something. It's hard enough as it is, but facing the situation you were in,
it must have seemed
almost insurmountable at some point.
It was insurmountable. It was terrifying. I cried a lot. I broke down a lot and I wanted to quit. I wanted to give up, especially given the fact that I had 3 professionals tell me that I would never make it.
Really?
One was a mediator, one was an attorney, and they said, oh, we tried that. You know, I got certified in the same school that you did. You're not going to make it. And so the odds were against me, but you have to remember, I came from warrior genes. Mm. And so basically the tagline to my life is impossible, difficult, done. And that's a quote by J. Hudson Taylor. And, it's like, okay, you know what? This is impossible. But my mom overcame impossible situations. My dad overcame impossible situations. And I just believe that with God, nothing is impossible. On our own, yeah, you know, I would not have been able to do it. But my faith sustained me. I had incredible support from my family and friends who would all of a sudden I would get a text and it would be an encouraging message from one of my friends, or, you know, I just knew how much my kids loved me and believed in me and my mom.
Do you think that going back to the principles that you learned that from your parents to persevere?
To persevere, yes. And then I have my mentors, and I've never met any of my mentors. Actually, what I do with my clients, I do a mentor exercise with them, and they look at who's impacted their lives in a profound way. And I break down the categories, you know, career, spiritually, emotionally, and look at that. And I did the same thing for myself. And one of them is Corrie Ten Boom. She was a Holocaust survivor. She's, you know, deceased, obviously. Gobbled up her books, her quotes. When I was faced with difficult circumstances and I just wanted to give up and I didn't want to go on anymore, I would just say, what would Corrie do? What would she say? What would her dad say to her? Okay, I can go on another day. Maybe I can't see past this week, but I can go on another day.
Who else were your mentors?
Another one, two were fictitious characters, but they're not really fictitious to me. No, one is Cora Monroe from Last of the Mohicans, and just her spirit of resilience. So I look at that, or I'd play the soundtrack to Last of the Mohicans and just see what were her character traits. What strength did she embody? And then the last one is a little girl in the Narnia series, Lucy. And Lucy had tremendous faith, regardless of what was going on. And everybody else could fall away and not believe, but Lucy always had faith.
So how would you tell someone that if you have a mentor that isn't actually a living person at the time or whatever was, I mean, how would you consult that person?
It's very easy. Read a book about them.
Oh.
Go to Google, use your best friend Google and search whoever their mentor is. Type in the name, character traits. Even for little Lucy, who was probably 8 in the movie, you know, I found a site, the character traits of Lucy in Narnia. And so look at those things and see, what do I have to become to be more like Lucy? What is Lucy giving me right now in this situation?
So when you were going through all this, how was your health holding up?
Not very well.
Not very well.
That's when I found out about the Lyme disease.
Oh.
Because I was going to doctor. I was always going to doctors and nothing was working. And things still affect my lungs, even as recently as the last 2 months. I have to be really careful. Flu season, cold season, because if I get sick, then it goes right to my lungs. And then I have to go back on inhalers and I have to do breathing treatments. And I'm a really active person. So take me out of the gym, take me away from cardio. And it's like, I shrink mentally, emotionally. So I just have to be really careful. But that, my health was really bad at that time. But I have to say that the contributing factors were more from an emotional level at that time.
Where do you think you got Lyme disease? Because in Arizona, as far as I know, we don't have any cases here.
You know, I don't really know. And Lyme is very, very complicated. And I lived in many, many places. I have not just lived in Arizona. I've lived, you know, pretty much, gosh, I want to say in at least 10 different states and in South America. I went to South America 3 different times. So it's not like, yes, I am a native here, but I haven't always lived.
Oh, so it could have been anywhere.
It could have been anywhere. And I do remember after I had my son Rock, I remember getting this round rash. It was perfectly round, just like the bullseye that they say is a sign of Lyme from a tick bite. Always had dogs as well. So I don't know.
Wow.
Some mystery question.
How long do you think you had it before you were diagnosed?
I have no
idea.
Well, I do not know. It could have been since childhood. Who knows?
So, you know, our lives are our habits. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, while you're going through all this, mm-hmm. not only on a mental, but what habits did you have to keep you going forward?
Yeah, habits are incredible. My habits were very instilled in me, but they were weak at the time. And, you know, just for your listeners, if you've faced so many inflection points and losses and you just feel like you're bombarded, you have to go back to who you are. And that's one of the things, I don't know that I'm answering your question, but I had to go back to who I was. And I would text my kids when I was just falling apart and I didn't want to wake up in the morning anymore. I would hear the birds in the morning and it was like, how dare they be so happy? How can they be waking me up right now? Not that I even slept, because I also had insomnia really bad as a result of all of this. And I would be crying. I remember one time pulling over in my car and texting my kids, what did I used to be like? Because I had forgotten who I was. And so it was like, okay, they said I was this. This is what I used to be like. And it was just a very dark period in my life. So before I could even go back to my habits, I had to find out who I was.
And who are you?
That's a very good question. I am a very loving person. I am an extremely faithful person. And I'm a very brave person. And I'm brave because I have to be brave.
It had to have been something. I mean, most people would quit.
Oh, believe me, I wanted to
quit. I know.
I wanted to quit.
Probably every day?
Oh, it was not even like every day. It was every minute. It was the dark night of my soul.
That's where you discovered yourself, then?
Well, I don't know that I can say I discovered myself. In so many ways, I feel I've always been who I am. But I was able to go past the healing and discover strengths. Just self-awareness is amazing. And discovering character traits and strengths, my values and needs. Those things, basically, they're the structure to who we are.
So as the old Rita was shedded away, mm-hmm. it seems like kind of slowly, mm-hmm. and the new Rita appeared. And you started Transform University?
Yes. First, I started as Open Door Life Coach. And that was what I called the coaching business. And then I rebranded a year and a half or 2 years ago. And that's when I started Transform University. But the great thing of it was, probably 4 years prior to that, I just had this idea. I said, I'm going to go trademark Transform University because that's going to be my business. And so before I even actually saw it, I just got this word, Transform University. I went, it was not taken. And so I trademarked it. And that's my rebranding of my company.
So who would want to join Transform University?
Good question. If I look at the demographics, if I look at who my clientele, my niche, my clients are predominantly solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, small business owners. But basically, who will benefit from coaching, who will get the most out of coaching, are those who are coachable. Those people who want more out of life, who recognize there's more to life than what they're experiencing, from joy, fulfillment, potential. The biggest thing is purpose, because life is all about purpose. And that's what I help people do, is find their purpose in life.
Looking back now, what would you tell the old Rita all those years ago?
You know, I'm still the younger me, the 5-year-old Rita. I would tell her, have faith. Do not give up your faith. It's going to be okay.
Do you have any parting words for us or anything you'd want to share with anybody who may be in a similar situation as you were? What would you say to them?
You know, the words of Winston Churchill come to me, and it's never give up. Never, never, never give up. And that's so easy to say, but yet you have to take steps to not give up. It's easy to say never give up, but then you have to be proactive and take the steps. Allow yourself, if somebody's going through a huge transition or loss or hurt or pain, don't suppress those feelings and emotions. You want to feel them, but you don't want to stay there. Give yourself time to go through that and then take some steps forward. Maybe it's set your clock, set your timer for 25 minutes. What can you do for yourself for 25 minutes to take you out of where you're at? And then you set another 25 minutes. And then maybe you set the next morning and then the next day. The important thing is to move. You can't stay where you're at.
Can you explain a little bit the process of Transform University when you start with a client? Where do you start at?
Yeah, no, great question. Basically, it is a transformational warrior's journey. And I start my clients off with four assessments because the assessments create awareness on things that people don't know. They, number one, they don't know their sweet spot. They don't know their strengths for the most part. They don't know what their values are. What really comes as a surprise is how important needs are, because all of us have emotional needs, the same as physical needs of water, of sleep, of food. So if you can find what your needs are, your top needs, and our needs come from our childhood, they come from life, they come from false belief systems that we've created in our mind. If you can identify those, life becomes so much easier because you realize why you're reacting to people, why you're reacting to the environment, and it just empowers you. So I start the warrior journey with the assessments, and then we go forth on their path as far as what their dreams are. How do you create a legacy? What's your mission statement in life? What are you tolerating in life? Do you have healthy boundaries? We do exercises to increase your emotional intelligence. And as I keep track of my clients' intake, why they come to me. And basically, most people come to me to get clarity and to get direction. And even very, very successful people, they need more clarity or more direction. Because sometimes when you ascend on that ladder, you need to expand your skill sets and your thinking. So clarity, direction, and increased confidence. And that's what they take away too.
Right. So everybody needs a coach once in a while, right?
Absolutely. I have two.
Oh, you have two?
Well, I have Edgar Olivo is my business coach. And then I have two different mentor coaches I belong to the ICF, which is the International Coaching Federation, and I stay within my certifications and requirements. So I am required to have X amount of coaching hours, and I grow so much from having my mentor coaches.
Well, I just want to go back just a little bit. Explain what's a morning like for you. What are your habits to get your day started?
Yeah, that's a great question, because habits are so important. And all successful people have habits. And my morning starts, I would like to say it starts at 5, but it doesn't because my morning starts the night before. So I prepare and I have a clarity assessment on my website, actually, that takes people through how do you master your day. And it always starts the night before. So the night before, I make sure that I have everything ready for the morning. So I'm not scrambling for breakfast or for what am I going to wear or my client's folders. Everything is ready the night before. I have a set bedtime. I unplug, so I read before I go to bed. I make sure I at least get 7 hours of sleep. If I don't get 7 hours of sleep, then I make sure I sleep in a little. When I say sleep in a little bit, I sleep till 6. For me, that would be ideal. And then I start with quiet time, and I have a little sitting room that I go to, and I have my journal, and I have a diffuser, and I have either lemon or grapefruit in there, because the scent of the lemon or grapefruit, it's just very awakening. And that's where I pray. That's where I journal and I frame my day. That's the most important part of my day. And then after that, I do 10 minutes of Pilates. It's not my workout because I will go to the gym later on. But what it does, it gets blood flowing and it just gets you moving, and it helps just to wake up and to feel better, energize.
Since you've had so many health issues and you've been such an exercise person, mm-hmm. how do you understand the mind-body connection? How does that work as far as you see?
understanding the mind,
the mind body connection, how our minds and our bodies work in conjunction, and they're so interrelated. Just for an example, if you're not getting enough sleep, I've noticed that my thoughts tend to be not very helpful. I mean, they're normally not very helpful most of the time, if I'm honest with myself. But when I don't get enough sleep, they're even less helpful. They tend to be more judgmental. So with your health issues that you had and what you experienced and what you were going through, how did you keep the mental?
It takes work. You have to be able, number one, to be still, because most people are distracted. I like to call them sleepwalkers. Most people sleepwalk through life, and you have to be able to wake up. And then you want to be able to identify what you're feeling. And I have my clients also recognize, where are you feeling it? Are you feeling it in your neck and shoulders? Are you feeling it in your stomach? Are you feeling it in your head? So that they start connecting their thoughts when they're starting to feel anxious with, where am I feeling this in my body? So once they're able to make that connection, they can see they may feel anger in their stomach, but they may feel frustration in their back. So it just, it's getting people to understand and just connect the dots.
Well, thank you, Rita. Thank you for joining us today. How can people get in touch with you?
Well, thank you, Rich, for having me. It's just been a pleasure being a guest here. And people can find me on my website, and that's transformuniversity.net. Just think of a fishing net. So transformuniversity.net.
What's the future hold for you? What are your plans here in the immediate future?
I'm really excited that Transform University is growing, and I'm working on my online content for people who cannot afford one-to-one coaching or to be able to attend retreats. They'll be able to go through the Warrior's Journey online.
So, and that'll be through your website?
Yes, absolutely.
When's the, you know, everything always takes longer than you think.
Always,
but
when
do you plan on having that up and running?
Well, I'm coaching myself to not be such a perfectionist because I'm the one that basically is in control of that. But I just want everything to be really good, and I want to make sure I'm not missing anything. And it is a journey, and there's a lot to it. So I would hope I would have it done within 6 months is my goal. That's what I have down on my calendar.
So people would join online and kind of do what you do in person, but not in person necessarily?
Correct. It would be self-guided. So I would still give them information via video, and then they would have download PDFs that they could do their homework and reflective work and field work.
Well, that sounds very exciting.
Yeah, thank you.
So Rita is still helping people.
Rita, little five-year-old Rita is still helping people, and she doesn't have to change bedpans.
Oh, excellent. It's very exciting.
Yes.
Thank you, Rita.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening. And please leave any comments or suggestions. We're always looking for ways to improve our show and make it the best show it can possibly be. Visit mindfulaccord.com, where you can find additional episodes and you can follow our blog. We give some helpful information on mindfulness, meditation, and just ways to manage our everyday stressful lives. And most importantly, if you know of a friend or a family member that would benefit from this story, please share it with them. Until next time, I'm Rich Decker.